This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Jimmy Carter dies. I'm Dave Packer. Jimmy Carter, the 39th President of the United States, has died. He was 100 years old.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Jimmy Carter was a Georgia peanut farmer with a toothy grin and a promise to turn the page after Watergate.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual.
Voters propelled him to victory.
ABC now projects Carter is the winner.
Carter's inaugural struck a hopeful tone.
The American dream endures.
But a one-term president, Carter faced domestic setbacks, a challenging economy, and the Iranian hostage crisis during his 4 years in office, but a celebrated post-presidency, working for decades with Habitat for Humanity and traveling the globe as a fierce defender of human rights. Carter's passing just over a year after the death of former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, his beloved wife of 77 years, and his childhood sweetheart. This is ABC News. President-elect Trump has recently suggested that the U.S. should regain control of the Panama Canal. The U.S. signed a treaty with Panama in 1977, which ceded control over the canal. But Trump has rallied against the fees that the canal charges shipping companies. But Senator Ben Cardin on This Week Today says the treaty was ratified by Congress and American allies may be nervous about Trump's plans.
You saw the same type of statements made during his previous administration when he threatened to pull out of NATO. These are treaty obligations which our allies rely upon, and it raises serious concerns about whether America will be there for them.
Trump also again floating the idea of the U.S. buying Greenland. Denmark says it's not for sale. And Trump ally Elon Musk sparking uproar by supporting Germany's far-right party in a newspaper guest opinion piece. The newspaper editorial director resigning in protest. Germany's early election is set for February 23rd. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Chuck from East Troy. Good morning to you, Chuck. You say what?
I have a bone to pick with you. Since my wife discovered Civic Media 2 years ago, we are addicted to Civic Media, and you are one of the ringleaders. So anyway, I just want to thank you. Have a good day.
Hey, Chuck, man, thank you very much for the call. Tell your wife I said thank you, and it's an honor and a privilege.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Congress has extended the 2018 Farm Bill while they continue to work on a new one, leaving Wisconsin farmers somewhat relieved but still worried. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
One of the biggest problems cited with the current farm bill is that it was negotiated more than 5 years ago, so the crop reference prices are outdated. Paul Mitchell, agriculture and economics professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, explains the reference prices allow payments to farmers when a crop falls below a certain level.
Prices have been declining on the corn and soybeans, and the process is used to create this support in these times of thin negative margins. They're out of date. Those floors were set in 2018, and you know, we've gone through a lot of inflation, and so you know, $1,000 isn't what it used to be.
Mitchell says farm organizations have been asking Congress to increase crop reference prices. The farm bill was extended again for another year as a part of a spending bill to avert a federal government shutdown. Mitchell says a lot of uncertainty looms with the incoming administration's goal to cut budget costs.
So my real worry is that agriculture will be collateral damage for the new administration as they pursue other political priorities where, you know, agriculture is not their number one priority. And they will take the cost of agricultural hurt to address these issues they want to address that would partly help them get elected.
Other areas of concern in the farm bill, he says, are crop insurance, conservation programs, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which is still offering benefits too low to help those who need them, according to an Urban Institute report. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, look for some patchy fog. We'll see a low of 29. Areas of fog to start your Monday, otherwise mostly cloudy. Afternoon high around 41. Monday night, clouds and 29. Tuesday, cloudy skies, 36. New Year's, partly sunny, 26.
Right now, 40 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. This week marked 80 years since the beginning of the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. And to mark the occasion, Jim and John of Mino and the Mayor welcomed on 100-year-old veteran Jack Krasuski of Pulaski to discuss his memories of that day.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest-serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. I'll tell you what, we've got a very, very, very special guest. I'm just going to pick up in my book from the chapter on this gentleman right here next to us. And this was 80 years ago today, basically, okay? When the Battle of the Bulge started in the middle of December, we were near the Rhine River. We didn't know anything was going to happen. The only problem was the weather. The coldest nights we'd ever seen. During the day, it was cloudy, foggy, and snowy, but we were relaxed. Things were pretty quiet. When the Germans did hit our front lines, they just pushed our infantry straight back. I don't know how many miles it turned out to be. I know we had to keep moving up through the deep snow for 3 days straight. They told us to be on alert for anything on the ground. In the sky, it didn't matter. Anything that came our way, shoot it down. For what we could tell, the Germans weren't stopping for anything. They told us to stay in the middle of fields, not in villages or towns, because we had to be able to see the German planes coming over. If there was even one tree in a field, we'd wrap a primer cord around it and knock it down so it didn't get in our way. I will say this, though. It's a miracle with the way they kept us fed. We had a lot of hot meals. I don't know how they kept us in food and supplies and everything, but they did. If they didn't cook something, they made sure we had rations at least. Those supply guys, food guys, ammunition guys, those were unsung heroes. As soon as the weather cleared, our bombers and fighters came in, and I'll tell you, they just blew that place apart. They attacked for 2 to 3 days straight. The sky was black with them going over during the day, and you could read a newspaper at night from light of so many bombs exploding. When the crowd started fleeing, they blew up the bridges behind them. Our army engineers had to build pontoon bridges. They did it at night and under attack the entire time. They would build them in one day. The infantry and tanks went across first. We're right behind them. Once we're in Germany, we went through the Black Forest. That was a tough-looking area. Those pillboxes they had there were about 3 feet thick. Our tanks took care of them. The big thing you had to worry about were mines all over the place. One day, we came upon a concentration camp. We could smell burnt flesh before we even got to it. It was full of displaced people. Jewish people, Polish, Italian, all different nationalities. They were people who had been healthy and strong enough to work for the Germans. Now they were so skinny, there was nothing nothing left to them, and all they had on was rags. I was fluent in Polish, so I started talking to them. They told me they got one meal a day, hot water with a piece of beet in it. It was a type of beet we used to use to feed our cows in the winter. We took care of them and fed them, but some of them were just too far gone. They were beyond help. We didn't know these kind of camps even existed. We went to a crematorium. Some of the bodies weren't completely burnt. They're just piles of bones. It was terrible. You could see empty canisters of the poison they had dropped down at the people who thought they were going to be taking showers. We would ask the German people what happened, about why they killed all the Jews and those other workers. Nobody admitted to knowing anything. They kept saying they had no idea. All they said was that the Germans wouldn't do anything like that. Pretty soon, word of mouth got to us. There were big pits around where the Krauts had lined up people, shot them, and covered them up with bulldozers. Other people said the guards would build wood piles and put the bodies on them and set them on fire. But the German citizens kept saying they didn't know anything about it. I don't know about that. One day, one of the Polish prisoners asked me if I could get some potatoes, so I bought him a couple of bags. I figured they were going to eat them. He wanted them to make moonshine. I don't think it was a week before they made it. They gave us some and warned me not to drink. It was powerful stuff.
Yeah. Thank God for the potatoes.
And the gentleman sitting next to us lived through that, Jack Krasinski. Jack, my friend, 100 years old, 80 years ago today, that was you in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
Welcome, my friend.
Yeah.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Do you remember all that stuff still to this day?
Well, some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of it I remember, yeah. I remember the Buchenwald where they poisoned all these people and the guys that were able to, after they were dead, they had to take them to crematorium and burn them. And I never knew they were doing that. None of us knew it. So that made us a little angry at the Germans, so we had no mercy on them after that.
Well, we got our good friend Dennis Peters from the Glam Band. He was an artillery man in the United States Army, just like you were. And you guys have a special relationship, no matter what era, don't you, Dennis?
Indeed, family. It's you know, we're
brotherhood.
Brothers, indeed. Yeah, no matter what, you know, there's some common ground, no matter what.
But the respect you have for these type of gentlemen.
Oh, indeed, without a doubt. I mean, it's just without you, where would we be? You know.
Yeah.
You know.
But talk about living history of gone through it and Jim, you're a huge historian type guy, you know, with the history of Green Bay and everything, but isn't this great to have this gentleman sitting here?
I was talking to him out in the lobby and how spry you are and with it at 100. I mean, that's great. Happy birthday. I mean,
yeah. Well, I feel pretty good. You know.
You look fantastic.
You do. Yeah. You really do.
I was pretty sick about 6 months ago, but a Polish lady is from Poland was my caretaker. And I told her I got a chance to go to Normandy, but I'll never make it, you know. And she says, you'll make it. You do what
Isn't
I do,
nice?
You know.
Yeah.
And we joked around, and she got me through. And, it was great to maybe celebrate the 80th anniversary of World War II. But
what was that like going back to Normandy, Jack?
Oh, I didn't remember too much of it. All I remembered is when we got off the water, you know, off the English Channel, and we drove in trucks. I was operating a 50 caliber machine guns.
Whoa.
We had four of them in a
quad
anchored. Quad, oh. Yeah. And then I'd sit in the turret. And, that was a good job, hey? We wore special glasses, and every fourth round was a tracer. So you couldn't miss them, you know. Oh, man. And we had so much firepower that anybody that came through never went back home.
No kidding.
Oh, boy. That was fun.
Beat in a video game, huh?
But, yeah.
Wow.
But, yeah.
And you said that you got angry when you found out more.
Well, we didn't think the Germans were doing that, killing all these Jews, you know.
Right.
And not only Jews, but old people and everything. They'd bring them in there by carloads and burn them up. They'd tell them they're going to take showers. They took their clothes off and put them all in the big room, and they put the cyanide in through the roof. And it was shortly after they were dead.
Took anything of value they could find, you know, with gold. Yeah. You know, gold teeth, things of that nature, anything. You know, just, man. Yeah.
So how has it been? I mean, it's a long time ago, 80 years. Are you pleased with that people remember? Or what? How do you think the country is embracing, recognizes your that war?
Sacrifice, yeah.
Well, you mean our country?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We don't talk about the war very much.
When you came back, you did not at all, did you?
No. I was married to my wife 60 years. We never talked about the war. She never asked me, and I never told her.
Wow.
I think I would have, you know,
right.
Some things, but she didn't want to know either. So.
But didn't you say you came back, and didn't your folks, like, you just walked into your house in the middle of the night, and your folks, who's there? And it's like, Jack, I'm home from the war. It's like, okay, see you in the morning. Right?
Who's that guy?
Yeah.
What's in the fridge?
Wow.
Yeah, I got off the bus, and we lived off the highway a little ways, and I had my clothes. And in the middle of the night, I got off the bus, and the bus driver says, where are you going? He says, I live over here, just a mile away. He says, I can take you there. No, I can walk. So,
gee. Wow. That's incredible. It's just, I mean,
think of these big homecoming parades.
This is right. And you're not, you're obviously not, you're happy. I mean, you seem to give a great disposition on life.
Yeah. We had a welcoming when we had, what do you call that? We went to Washington, D.C., the memorials.
Oh, yeah.
On the way home, there were so many people who welcomed us.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, that honor flight.
That was a big welcome party.
Oh, yeah. Well deserved, too.
Yeah. But other than that, there was no parties for us or anything.
Right. And you came back and went to work?
Resumed what you were doing before.
Dennis, you were the same age as Jack when you were in the Army.
No.
What? No.
No,
but I'm just saying this. I mean, but you...
Most people were.
We don't realize sometimes how young our soldiers are.
Oh, for sure.
That's the thing I'm trying to get at. You know what I mean? We send these young kids to war.
Right.
You're a kid, weren't you, Jack?
Right. 18?
Yeah.
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 And, someone's younger, you know?
Well, if you volunteered and they didn't catch you, you had to be 18, you know? But I was 18 when I got in and 21 when I got out. But, hey, every kid should go to the Army for a year or two.
I agree.
They teach you so many things, you know, respect and...
discipline.
Discipline, everything.
And a love for your country, too.
Work ethic.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's other countries that do that for 2 years. Yeah. And I think that's been talked about, and I'm not opposed to that either. I mean, we have a lot more incentives for people to go now than we did when you were there in terms of education and things when they get back. But so what do you do now? You're 100 years old. You're in great shape. What do you, what's like a day like?
Oh, I get up, I lay around, watch TV a little while. Then I get something to eat, and then I get something to drink. And it just... I go places a lot.
You're sought after. I mean, everybody wants to talk to you, right?
Oh, yeah. I got some friends. We'd go out and eat. And
I mean, but even the media would like to. We've been trying to get you on here for a year, so.
you're a tough act to get into
the
studio.
You are. Yeah. You really are.
But, Jack, you know what I'm talking about, again, with Dennis, with these young kids. I mean, is there something that the government knows to send these really young kids to war? Because... And I hate to put it this way, but almost like they don't know any better and they'll take these orders and
that's
do whatever.
Exactly it.
That's it. We didn't know any better, and we did what they told us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some days were a lot of fun. Some days weren't. But
talk about when it was so cold, you guys would try to get into what, hay bales or something?
Oh, yeah. That cold, I'd take straw off. They had raised a lot of mangoes. We fed that to our cows, and that's what these prisoners were eating. They'd give them that with a little boiled water. Anyhow, we'd steal the straw off of there and put it in a hole in the ground. And it was miserable. I never slept in a building from the time we left, got into France till the war was over.
Wow.
Day and night. And it was, some days were miserably cold, you know. The Battle of the Bulge was goddamn cold.
Okay, that's cold. We'll let that go. He's 100. Let him go.
You guys had no idea how big of a battle. Because didn't you guys pretty much think you're going to be home by Christmas, the war was over?
Yeah.
Can you describe that, Jack?
Yeah.
That you guys thought it was over, and then all of a sudden the Germans come out with this huge offensive against you?
Yeah. Well, we were on the left flank, so they didn't... We never had a move. We were dug in, and our job was to shoot down the strafing planes and the low-flying bombers. And, hey, we had... lots of firepower. In our battalion, we had 64 guns.
Wow.
And they'd line them up along the side of the roads, you know. And then nobody could get through. There was no way they could make it because nobody took credit for it when they came down because you got, 50, 60 guys shooting at them.
Yeah.
And
there's more coming, too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Jack, stick around. Yeah. Jack Krasinski.
Krasinski.
Did I pronounce it wrong all the time?
Krashevsky.
Krashevsky.
Yeah, there you go.
Polish.
Yeah,
finally.
I'm Italian. We're not smart. 100 years old, 80 years ago today, he was in the midst of the Battle of the Bulge. Back after this.
Mino and the Mayor is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WISS and WGBW weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the center, WRCE.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW System spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people at Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Spotlight, we'll go to the Dom Salvia Show. Dom was joined by guest co-host Earl Ingram to talk about the looming government shutdown and who is casting its shadow. Elon Musk. No one elected Musk, but people did elect their legislators, who are now being overtly threatened by Donald Trump and Elon Musk. To hear more of any of these shows, download the Civic Media app available on the Google Play and Apple App Store. Or check out any of these shows in podcast form after the fact on Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Night divides a day.
Yeah, welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Earl Ingram joining me this hour. You can check his show out 8 to 10 a.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just PS is on the board. And the Republicans, a debate going on in the assembly right now in Congress. And the reporting, Earl, it's getting pretty heated from the Washington Post. Arguments are very heated on the House floor, and Rep. Mark Molinaro, a Republican from New York, who's presiding over the chamber, has had enough, and apparently so has his gavel. While he was rapping the crowd to quiet down and quiet the rabble-rousing, the gavel shattered. Pieces of the wooden mallet are lying on the House floor. It's like my broken dreams, man. The gavel. You break the gavel. I mean, come on, man. What is going on? CNN Chiron is saying Johnson is going to speak as the GOP expects the funding bill to fail.
To fail.
Yes, that's apparently maybe they're doing some whipping and they don't know if they have the number of votes needed to pass. I mean, they have Republicans that have a problem with it. They have, you know, Democrats that had a deal that the Republicans backed out of because of Elon Musk. And they weren't even involved in having this conversation on this deal. So who knows? But if that's the case, then if this bill fails, where does that leave us, Earl? The Wall Street Journal had a couple of points on this regarding a government shutdown. How a looming U.S. government shutdown would affect you. Will it affect me? Will it affect you, Earl? Will it affect you at home? 855-752-4842. Now, as mentioned, they reached a bipartisan deal, but the spending package fell apart after Trump and Elon Musk had opposition to it. I mean, the fact that we even have to mention Elon Musk. I mean, you know, and I saw this from somebody else, but I had the original thought, Earl. Who's the big Democratic boogeyman?
Just Soros.
Soros, right. Man, if you had Soros sitting up there next to Biden, right? Right? Well, they would freak out, man. The Republicans would be all
explode.
Oh my God, if it was Soros.
Hey.
Oi. Oh, hey, of course he's Jewish.
Uh-huh.
I mean, come on. But it's apparently this is the new world. All right, so to keep the government funded, a spending bill must pass both the House and the Senate, and Biden must sign it into law before Friday's midnight deadline. That's tomorrow.
Ain't gonna happen.
Midnight as in like in 6.5 hours?
At 12:01 a.m. Saturday. No.
Okay.
Yep. Friday night. Yep. Midnight Friday.
30 which would hours. Be Saturday.
Yes. Yes. Let's see. So what happens during the shutdown? Government offices continue essential work, but tasks deemed non-essential are put on ice. Paychecks stop, and many workers are furloughed until Congress passes new funding. The White House controls how agencies operate during a funding lapse, so the impact of a shutdown on the public will vary. Now, transportation, TSA, airport screenings would continue, but travelers might see longer security lines at the airport if unpaid TSA agents skip work. National parks are often closed. What else? Government services and many Americans rely on everyday life, such as Social Security payments and U.S. Postal mail delivery, would continue. Critical services like the Energy Department to ensure nuclear reactors are manned, those will continue, as well as would military and border control functions. But what else could be affected? Well, folks who are interacting with federal agencies for support, such as getting a new Social Security card, could experience delays. Environmental and food safety inspections have been delayed in past shutdown.
Now, oh, great.
Yeah, USDA nutrition programs, which support tens of millions of people, would likely operate on a skeletal staff. New loans for small farmers across the U.S. would be halted. Only a small number of HUD, Housing and Urban Development employees, will be on staff to answer emergency questions and process Federal Housing Administration issued loans. Its rental assistance programs wouldn't immediately be affected. So, you know, there's some of the issues. A government shutdown would cause roughly 875,000 federal workers to be furloughed, according to the nonprofit Bipartisan Policy Center. That estimate excludes military members. Now, you know, Earl, according to the Project 2025, you know, these cats aren't fond of the federal workforce. Do you think they give a damn if 875,000 people are laid off or furloughed, you know, a few days before Christmas?
You know what's worse? You know what's worse, Dominic? What's that? What you didn't mention? Congress still gets paid.
And they're asking for a raise in this one, too, man. They want more money. They want more money. They get theirs.
Oh. Yeah, man. Come on, man. How ironic is it that you're voting for the average citizens, and they'll lose or their pay will be shuttered, but not yours? What should occur is, if this is going to happen and it can happen, people should demand that Congress does not get paid.
Yes.
They created it.
Yes.
It's an insult that they get theirs. And many of the people, well, they're going to get it in the end, as you stated.
Yeah.
In the end. But no, man, it's unconscionable. And I've also stated before that this should never be. It's part of what they're saying is true. You've got to stop running Congress. The final, we're always at the 12th hour coming up with a continuing resolution. Man, sit down, hammer out the budget, get it done. And we wouldn't be stuck in these kind of situations, right?
Absolutely.
You got to get that, you know, enough of that is enough, but that's on Congress.
That is on Congress.
That's not on the people.
Yep, and that is a lack of leadership. Well, it's on the people to the extent that we elect, quote unquote, these folks in Congress. Maybe right. We should do a little better job, Earl.
Yep.
do government shutdowns save money? According to the Wall Street Journal, the answer, no. According to most public policy groups and congressional research reports, federal workers receive back pay, and the acts of winding down operations and maintaining contingency plans cost taxpayer money. Quote, a government shutdown where we end up paying people not to work is precisely at odds with the important objective of DOGE, which is to increase efficiencies. Yeah, you think? Hey, let's shut it down. We're going to increase efficiencies by paying people not to work and increasing the operational costs of the less efficient business that gets done. Yeah, let's do that. Way to go, Elon. 855-752-4842. Who's pulling whose strings? You know, when the marionette strings get tangled up, you know, the whole thing falls apart. Come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
This is a special report from ABC News. Jimmy Carter dies. I'm Dave Packer. Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, has died. He was 100 years old.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Jimmy Carter was a Georgia peanut farmer with a toothy grin and a promise to turn the page after Watergate.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual.
Voters propelled him to victory.
ABC now projects Carter is the winner.
Carter's inaugural struck a hopeful tone.
The American dream endure.
But yeah, one-term president, Carter faced domestic setbacks, a challenging economy, and the Iranian hostage crisis during his 4 years in office, but a celebrated post-presidency, working for decades with Habitat for Humanity and traveling the globe as a fierce defender of human rights. Carter's passing just over a year after the death of former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, his beloved wife of 77 years, and his childhood sweetheart. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks lose to the Bulls. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost to the Bulls at the United Center last night, 116-111. Damian Lillard was back, scoring 29 points. Giannis out a fourth straight game, dealing with back spasms and a flu bug. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers after the loss.
You know, if guys are out, they're out, and you still want to win games. I think we should have won the last two games, but should have in doing it is two different things. And, you know, I don't look back like, okay, well, yeah, we could have been 18-12, but we're not. You know what I'm saying? So what are you going to do about it? You're going to go and keep building. Hopefully we get everybody back. We start playing well and get back to the way we were playing.
Men's college hockey. The Badgers in the final of the holiday faceoff at Five Serve Forum in Milwaukee tonight against UConn. Wisconsin beating Ferris State yesterday 8-0 to advance. NFL. Packers at the Vikings. A recap coming up tonight after the game. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, look for some patchy fog. We'll see a low of 29. Areas of fog to start your Monday, otherwise mostly cloudy. Afternoon high around 41. Monday night, clouds and 29. Tuesday, cloudy skies, 36. New Year's, partly sunny, 26.
Right now, 38 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A 2023 decision in an Arkansas redistricting case found individual voters did not have a private right of action to challenge the maps. The state of Louisiana tried the same tactic in its chaotic gerrymandering case, but was refused on June 24th. Be looking for another challenge in 2025. Defying precedent, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals held in a 2023 Arkansas racial gerrymandering case that individual voters do not have a private right of action under the VRA Section 2. It said only the U.S. Justice Department could bring such cases, despite individuals having filed 90% of previous challenges. Calling it radical, scholars expected it to be quickly overturned, but this January, the full Eighth Circuit refused to rehear the case. Seeing an opening, Louisiana asked the full Fifth Circuit to rehear its gerrymandering case on the same grounds, with 13 other Republican attorneys general urging a no private right of action decision. In a close vote Monday, the Fifth Circuit refused that rehearing. For now, the Eighth Circuit decision still only affects Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. But it's clear that private right of action is the new battleground and will almost certainly reach the U.S. Supreme Court. We've linked to more on the private right of action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Dom Salvia Show.
How about this one? Harvey Kay, a Delano Democrat.
The problem with that is that that was his mother's family name. You might not realize that he had a father, too.
Come on, man.
Subscribe to my arguments, and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right, I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Dom Salvia.
Next time, what does former FBI and CIA Director William Webster have to say about Cash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard? Also, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, on the rise of homelessness and political exhaustion. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear from the John and Gordy Show. John and Gordy welcomed on their weekly guest, Mike McCabe, to discuss a variety of topics, but most importantly, his latest blog post about criminal folk heroes, in which he draws parallels between 1930s bank robbers and Luigi Mangione.
John and Gordy on the radio, 92.7 is the place to go. It's John and Gordy, John and Gordy, John and Gordy, John and Gordy.
WMDX.
That's us, John Peterson and Gordy Young.
Oh, I like the full names.
Yeah, we've been going with that lately.
Mike McCabe is our guest again, as always, from Substack, and you've got a few really good posts here. Let's get to the first one that you, this is kind of a personal thing for you, and this was posted in The Bulwark, and it's titled, Open Government Nonprofits Are Dying Off Just When They're Needed Most. Tell us about this.
Yeah, what's happened?
Well, I ran a group called the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign for 15 years, yeah. and we specialized in open government and dealing with money in politics and all those kinds of things, and when the Citizens United decision came down from the Supreme Court allowing billionaires and corporations to spend as much as they wanted on elections, you'd think that that would have been a moment where the need for money in politics watchdogs and the need for transparency, the need to let the public know who's buying our government,
exactly,
would have been heightened. But all the charitable foundations around the country that had been funding that kind of work basically just threw up their hands and fled the scene and said, we'll just work on voter turnout and voting rights, and we'll deal with other democracy topics, but those kinds of things, the open government, the anti-corruption efforts, the bird dogging of money in politics, they just fled the scene, and we actually lost a grant that was half of our operating revenue at one point. Had to scramble like crazy to fill that gap. We were successful in being able to do it, and we didn't have to lay off any staff, but we survived, kept our heads above water. But it's been a struggle for these kinds of groups ever since. Now there are national groups. One's called Open Secrets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That has a national database of donors to politicians.
They have a big name.
And Open Secrets has laid off half of their staff because of the loss of funding. And it looks like that group might go under. The Center for Public Integrity, another group that looks at tries to maintain high ethical standards for public officials by being careful watchdogs of ethical behavior. They look like they're going under because big funders out there have just decided, we're going to spend our money elsewhere. And so right at the time when we need these resources to help the public understand what is being done behind the scenes to influence those who are making decisions in our government, these groups are imperiled, and to the point where some of the big names in that universe, like Open Secrets, Center for Public Integrity, may have to close their doors altogether.
Yeah,
they're already severely weakened, and they're really teetering on the brink, and they may have to close their doors. Wisconsin Democracy Campaign is a group that I ran for many years, does this kind of work here in our state, and it's still going strong. Mm-hmm. But again, the funders are trying to steer groups like that away from watching money in politics, watching ethics in government, you know, trying to maintain open government that the public can actually see. They're trying to steer them toward other kinds of interests, and that's a shame. And yeah, you said that this is personal to me. It's something that I've spent much of my life working on, and that work is very much in danger.
Well, it seems to me that people have turned more to alternative media at this point, and we have heard so much during the last election that the election turned on what people felt, and the groups you just mentioned deal with facts and figures. People are turning away from the facts and figures and going to more of how they feel, and maybe going to a media outlet that makes them feel right or good or substantiate what they believe. And we're just talking about beliefs and, you know, just thoughts and how
well,
people
you
feel.
You're listening to podcasts and things like that.
You had a clip with Rachel Maddow just earlier in the show, the last half hour. Right. And the point was made that Elon Musk had put in something like $250 million, $250 million to influence the election. One of the things that we specialized in doing is trying to find those hidden ways that money flows and bring that to light. I've seen research or data that suggests that if you look at all of the different ways that Elon Musk used his wealth to influence the outcome of the election, that it probably was in excess of $1 billion.
Okay. Yeah.
Four times as much as was transparent, was readily visible.
Right.
And the groups like Open Secrets or Wisconsin Democracy Campaign here closer to home, or Center for Public Integrity, those groups specialize in doing that kind of investigative journalism, that digging, that sleuthing that allows the public to eventually learn how much is really being done behind the scenes to influence the vote. And I think it's very fair to say that Elon Musk's total commitment financially to the 2024 election was close to or in excess of $1 billion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know that, you know, I peruse X all the time, and I'm getting all the Elon Musk posts.
Yep.
And one post that he put in there was somebody had posted that no one's turning to media anymore, you know, the old media. And now they're going to the new media, and that X is your source for news. And he reposted that.
Yeah.
And that's the message he's getting across at X. And it is balanced in a way. I know that it is balanced. But at the same time, he's an extreme P.T. Barnum-ish owner of X. And
oh, it's
he
not,
is doing everything
it's not
he can.
Balanced at all, because he can create algorithms that make sure that everybody sees his posts, and he can throttle posts. Those algorithms will throttle posts that provide a dissenting view.
Right.
And that is happening on X every single day. People are forced to see what he posts.
Yes.
And so he has tens of millions, hundreds of millions of views of his posts. And then the Center for Public Integrity, if it puts something on X, it will be seen by hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people, but not tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people.
You're right.
So that is how the thumb is put on the scale on these big social media sites.
Absolutely.
Is the way the algorithms are written to favor certain communication and to throttle other communication.
Well, I was going to add. Before you threw that in, I was going to add the fact that, you know, a lot of the people that I follow don't show up anymore. So I'm not seeing what they're saying anymore.
Right.
And I'm seeing a lot of what he's saying. Right. Even though the stuff is included on X, it's not being seen by the people that need to see it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and some of them are going over to Blue Sky. A lot of people are hitting Blue Sky
now. Or Blueski is
or Blueski. Yeah. That's
who knows how it's pronounced.
It seems like that's it's continuing to grow by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
So that's hopeful.
You think about getting there or putting something on there?
I have not yet, and I am on a number of different social media platforms and really don't want to add another. My favorite is Substack.
Yeah.
Because it's a place where much more
thoughtful
and lengthier kinds of communications are not only allowed, permitted but they flourish.
Yeah. There's a word limit on all the other ones.
Right.
You posted another one. Again, let's talk length on this one. You posted mass shootings, a list of mass shootings since Columbine.
Yeah. I posted that on Facebook because there's not a word limit there. I tried to post it on LinkedIn, but there is a character limit on LinkedIn, and you couldn't put the whole list on there. I also posted it on Substack. There's a dimension of Substack called Notes, which is a little bit like X or Blue Sky or any of those other platforms. Mm-hmm. It's shorter kinds of posts, and I posted it there as well. But basically just looked at that defining moment, the Columbine Massacre in Littleton, Colorado, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And, of course, everybody said there was shock and horror across the country, and everybody said never again. No other community should have to endure what Littleton, Colorado had to endure with the Columbine Massacre. And since that time, I posted the list of every community that's been affected by school shootings ever since, and the list goes on for 25 years, and it's well over 400 communities across America that you literally have to keep scrolling and keep scrolling and keep scrolling as you go through this list.
You know how you kind of flick the screen and
right.
I mean, it just rolls on and on. It's just outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's hard to believe.
That, and hopes, thoughts and prayers were offered after each one of them.
Yep. Yeah. And nothing done. And now they're protecting us from transgender athletes. I mean, that's their focus. Yeah. Not shootings in schools, but transgender athletes, which I think there were less than 10. At a current hearing, they talked to, one of the sports guys that handles, college sports and said, there's like 510,000 athletes, but less than 10 transgender athletes.
And the school shooting list that I posted started with the first community right after Littleton 25 years ago. And the list, of course, ends with Madison, Wisconsin.
Well,
you had some other posts since we last talked, right?
You want to mention
one of those?
Well, the latest one that you put out is
on Substack.
Yes, the canary.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that article.
Well, that had to do with healthcare.
Healthcare.
And of course the shooting of the health insurance executive.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's been all this yammering on social media. Sometimes it almost seems celebratory. Mm-hmm. Others are firing back and are condemning the shooter. And for me, I don't care what the question is. Murder's not the answer. But what came to my mind when I saw so much of the chatter on social media was the dinner table conversations with my dad back in the day during my childhood. And, my dad was a dairy farmer and fought in World War II and only had an eighth grade education, had to drop out of school at the age of 14 because his dad died of colon cancer. So he had to run the farm starting at the age of 14 to take care of his mom and his sisters. And, he earned an honest living his whole life and at one point went 35 years without a day off, worked seven days a week for 35 years. But he used to sit at this upper table and tell of these gangsters, these outlaws, like John Dillinger and Babyface Nelson and Pretty Boy Floyd and Ma Barker and Bonnie and Clyde. And they were bank robbers. And it was so reminiscent of what we're hearing now about Luigi Mangione. Mm-hmm. And you know, I just had to imagine that Dad didn't think much of bankers because they tended to take people's land away from them and foreclose on farmers and put them out of business. And
gangsters became folk heroes.
And after the break, we can talk a little bit more about the parallels between that era where it was the banks ruining people's lives.
And healthcare.
Yeah, today. We'll be back with more with Mike McCabe in just a moment.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Freezing your credit sounds drastic, but it's not. In fact, freezing your credit is one of the best ways you can protect yourself from identity theft. Freezing your credit doesn't stop your credit score from going up or down. It's just a way to make sure that nobody can open an account in your name, not even you, without removing your freeze first. So to freeze your credit, you just contact each of the three major credit bureaus and you request a credit freeze. Just search up the term credit freeze and you'll find the phone numbers and websites where you can get it all done. And don't worry, you can always unfreeze your credit when you need to apply for new credit, like a loan or something, by contacting each bureau again. For more money tips, check out workmoney.org or text money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 88285. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out the spotlight for this week, we'll hear from The Todd Alba Show. Todd, ever a defender of the UW system, covers a new article from WORT that the UW Board of Regents have spent a staggering $51 million on consultants over the last 4 years.
Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 9 before the hour of 1 o'clock. At the top of the hour, a CBS and ABC News update for you, depending upon the station. A sports update with our great sports reporter, Mike Clemens. And our weather team will update you on the situation across Wisconsin. Some winter storm warnings in effect into tomorrow for parts of the state, including our listeners at WGBW in Green Bay and parts of the Fox Valley for WISS in Oshkosh. Several inches of snow could be on the way for most of Wisconsin. First big snowfall of the season for most of us. So gird your loins or something like that. Why would you need to gird your loins for snow? I'm not sure, but that's
what I was asking.
All right. I want to get more. Maybe we'll get into this. Lots to get to at Trigvy. Trigvy Olson's going to be here in hour number 2. And also, we're going to give you a chance to win a $100 bill, $100 next hour in our grown-up gift list text to win contest. Also going to be eligible for 8 grand prizes. Going to be given away at the end of this week randomly by computer choice. A robot vacuum, a humidifier, espresso machines, snowblower, and luggage. All that and more. So stay. Download the Civic Media app right now, and then we'll tell you the magic word next hour, and you can enter in. Somebody next hour wins $100. It might as well be you. All right. Great reporting by WORT, WORT Radio, 98.9, a community radio station here in Madison, a legacy station in Madison. Great community reporting. The reporter on this, Sarah Gabler, of WRORT News Department. Headline, UW System spends millions on consultants. $51 million. That's how much money the University of Wisconsin system paid Chicago-based Huron Consulting Group between 2019 and 2023. Neil Krause says that number is, quote-unquote, astronomical. Krause is a professor of political science at UW-River Falls and president of United Falcons, the campus branch of AFT Wisconsin. He tracks the University of Wisconsin's budget cuts, technology spending, and austerity measures. Now, again, we're limited on time here, so we're not going to go into the whole story right now. Might talk about with Triglier. We'll do it on another show, maybe tomorrow. But I want to read you a couple of sentences here from this reporting at WORT. Quote, from the records we were given, we learned that the University of Wisconsin system holds several multi-year contracts with Huron Consulting that total over $51 million. That includes a contract for the rollout of a new statewide workforce technology program called Workday that cost over $47 million. Another contract shows that Huron designed and facilitated a workshop for institutional realignment. So these consultants put together a workshop, i.e. a meeting and a PowerPoint, called Institutional Realignment at UW Oshkosh in August of last year, just months before the layoffs. That workshop cost $24,000. UW system spent $24,000 of our tax money to hold a workshop on how they were going to take people's jobs away and close down 2-year campuses.
And they sure did.
The $51 million spent by the UW system between 2019 and 2023 on contracts with Huron is almost three times as much as the $18 million budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. You understand this? The consulting fees paid for by our tax dollars that UW system spent was three times more than the budget shortfall that closed the campuses the 2 years at the Oshkosh campus. More reporting from WORT, consultants were paid $275 to $310 per hour. The UW system redacted these hourly rates from the documents they sent us. Oh, I bet they did. Krause, who teaches at UW River Falls, is concerned that the UW system is ceding control to corporate interests. Great reporting by WORT. Isn't anybody a block away from me right now at the state capitol paying any attention? And I don't mean just Republicans. I mean anybody.
Hey, Tony Evers said that they're doing the best they can.
Right. Tony Evers, when it comes to the UW system, Tony Evers is the George W. Bush of Wisconsin. Remember when Hurricane Katrina hit in Louisiana and the FEMA secretary went down there, Brown? And George W. Bush said, you're doing a hell of a job, Brownie. That's essentially what Tony Evers said to Jay Rothman. Well, you know, he's doing the best that he can. Gee willikers, I'm all jazzed up. Doing the best that he can? I do not understand why Democrats are not making political hay on this. And not just political hay, actually getting something done. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Because they seem to be complicit with the idiot Republicans, not voters, but the legislators who continue to cut the budget of the UW system and want to see these schools close. $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants to tell people how to make it better. Ask people at Richland Center. Ask people in Waukesha. Ask people in Washington County if they got their $51 million worth in consulting fees for the UW system. Back with hour two after this. It's the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. $100 on the line. You could win it. And Trayvon Olson, don't go anywhere. It's the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show, you're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. That was the mosh pit.
And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. Jimmy Carter dies. I'm Chuck Sievertson. More reaction to the death of America's 39th president, who was 100. Announced by the Carter Presidential Center in Atlanta, his base for doing humanitarian work around the world for the decades after he left the White House. ABC's Steve Osunsami.
The Carter Center is asking people, instead of flowers, to donate to the Carter Center. That was his sort of life mission on Earth after the presidency, which was to improve the lives of his fellow man across the world.
ABC News Chief Washington Correspondent Jonathan Carl.
We've seen time and time again presidents leave the White House, go on to serve in corporate boards, given some cases now, you know, speeches that can pay $1 million for a single speech. Jimmy Carter didn't do any of that stuff.
Mr. Carter put Habitat for Humanity on the map. This is ABC News.